The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
John Godwin wrote the 1978 book, Murder USA, The Ways We Kill Each Other. He said, to get the weight of what he'd seen as a journalist off his chest. The crime reporter had traveled the country, investigating everything from the Manson murders to a little-known and long-forgotten case out of Fort Worth, Texas. The result of which ultimately led to Murder USA, the book Godwin described as a, quote, gloomy and bloody picture of how little value is placed on human life in America. The United States was facing a murder epidemic. It was, quote, the age of mass murder, Godwin said, and he was right. In an FBI report released in September of 1978, Fort Worth was shown to have failed in keeping up with the rest of the nation's efforts to reduce the crime rate in the first quarter of that year. Fort Worth's violent crime rate had decreased by 10% in the first 3 months of 1978, though, and the rate of homicides had gone down 29%, a huge number by any city's standards. This report, however, was a smokescreen. Violent crime and murder were, in fact, up when the year 1978 ended, and for the most part, these numbers would steadily rise through the end of the decade, the entirety of the 1980s, and into the first half of the 90s. Cities in Texas were high on the list, in fact, of the most violent ones in the nation. By the end of 1978, another report released by the FBI indicated that the violent crime rate in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex, along with Houston, jumped higher than the other cities in the United States' 25 most populated metropolitan areas. Among the many homicides in Fort Worth that year was one of the most horribly brutal and undoubtedly senseless the city had seen, a crime that remains unsolved to this day. The January 1978 slaying of 17-year-old Leisha McGee. On October 15, 1960, Leisha Ann McGee was born to parents Helen Ruth and Cecil Carl McGee. Leisha was the youngest of the McGee siblings. Her sister Lori was born just 13 months before her. Her other sister Deborah was 6 years older, and a brother Michael, 8 years older. When Leisha was only 7 years old, her father Cecil died as the result of a blood clot. The impact on the family was devastating, and along with growing up in South Fort Worth's Greenbrier neighborhood, which was known for being rough and tumble, Leisha was no delicate flower. She'd seen a lot. Though she was small, and though her siblings, most often her sister Lori, took up for Leisha on a regular basis, she was tough. At Southwest High School, Leisha was on the field hockey and track teams, and her love for these activities was presumably the reason Leisha often spoke about becoming a physical education teacher later on in life. She liked to go bowling or drive go-karts at the local track with friends, of which she had many. Leisha got along with anyone and everyone. She was always seeking a good time, the kind that comes without trouble, and she liked to cut up. Her sense of humor among the first things folks who remember her speak of. Leisha liked the harder rock and roll genres of the time, and particularly loved listening to the music as she drove around alone or with friends in her Pride and Joy, a white 1968 Chevrolet Impala. Leisha worked at University Car Wash for extra cash. The love for her car likely among the reasons she chose it as a job, as she could be seen washing the Impala, inside and out, on a regular basis. It was her baby, and she liked to keep it looking top-notch. When she got it, the Chevy Impala was 10 years old, sure, but the vehicle was pristine. Helen, Leisha's mother, had purchased it for her from Leisha's oldest sister's mother-in-law, who is said to have only driven it to church on Sundays, 4 blocks away from her home. By the late 1970s, it was Leisha's mother, sister, and her living in their South Fort Worth home. And in 1978, 17-year-old Leisha was a junior at Southwest High. Sunday, January 22, 1978, was an unusually and bitterly cold day for Fort Worth, Texas. The high temperature never went above freezing, and the low was just over 16 degrees Fahrenheit that morning. That evening, after detailing her Chevy Impala, Leisha wanted to spend the rest of the day with friends Kathy and Jim, former neighbors who had just moved out on their own, about 4 miles away. Leisha's mom, however, wanted her to go along with her sister to the local laundromat to help with the family laundry. After raising a huge fuss, her sister Lori told Leisha she didn't have to come along. She'd handle the laundry by herself. Leisha went along with her plans and arrived at Kathy and Jim's house sometime around 10:30 p.m. to eat pizza and watch a movie. Pizza was something of a luxury for Leisha, a treat, and was at the forefront of the reasons she wanted to hang out with her friends instead of doing chores. Not long after 11:30 that night, Kathy and Jim's roommate, James, arrived home from his job at a local service station. He joined the three, and at about 12:30 a.m., now January 23rd, Leisha McGee left her friend's house to return home, but she never made it. I believe in having clean options, and I support companies who innovate products that break the norm and help clean up my daily routine. That's why I love Native. Not only does my Native deodorant do the job well, it's made better than conventional products, with natural ingredients like coconut oil and shea butter, stuff that you've heard of and can actually pronounce. Native never uses ingredients like aluminum, which clogs your sweat glands to prevent you from sweating. No thanks. And Native doesn't use parabens, sulfates, and talc either. I use Native, and I'm telling you, you don't have to have weird stuff like aluminum in your deodorant to smell fresh. I always feel and smell clean and fresh with Native all day long, which I cannot say of many of the conventional brands I've used in the past. Native deodorant comes in over 10 scents and includes rotating seasonal ones if switching things up is your thing. Scents like coconut and vanilla and lavender and rose are among the classics. My favorite, without a doubt, is the cucumber and mint. I don't like smelling overly fragrant, and the cucumber and mint Native deodorant is just right. The scent is mild, smells just like the natural ingredients it's supposed to, and works the entire day. Oh, and Native never tests their products on animals. That's a big deal to me, and so is Native's Plastic Free by 23. An initiative that aims to provide sustainable packaging options for all their products by the end of 2023. Native is risk-free to try. Every product comes with free shipping within the U.S., plus free 30-day returns and exchanges. Most everyone who's tried Native loves it, and they've got over 14,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Make the switch to Native today by going to nativedeo.com/gonecold. Or use promo code GONECOLD at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/gonecold. Or use the promo code GONECOLD at checkout for 20% off your first order. Leisha McGee failed to come home from watching a movie and eating pizza with friends at their home on Sunday, January 22, 1978, and her mother began to worry. Earlier that night, Leisha's sister Lori ended up at a Fort Worth club with a friend not far from the McGee home. They left the club a little before 1 a.m., and as Lori began to drive her friend home at Felix Street and Interstate 35, The hood of her car popped open and flipped up, obstructing her view. Lori quickly pulled over, both she and her friend laughing at the scary experience, and she closed the hood. Lori decided it would be best to stop by her house and borrow Leisha's car to take her friend the rest of the way. They pulled up to the McGee home at 1 a.m. She noticed Leisha's Impala wasn't there. When she entered the house, Lori and Leisha's mother was waiting for her to ask if she'd go look for Leisha, who hadn't returned home. Lori and her friend left in her car to look for Leisha, expecting to find her car broken down somewhere between the McGee home and Leisha's friend's house. The 1968 Chevrolet Impala, however, was nowhere to be seen. When they arrived at the home of Kathy and Jim, Leisha's friends, they told Lori that her sister left sometime around 12:30 a.m., just about 45 minutes or so before. For the next few hours, Lori searched, first driving any and every route between the McGee home and Leisha's friend's house that her sister could have possibly taken, the search becoming less and less sensical as it went on, since all Leisha's usual haunts were long closed and Cowtown was quiet. Light snow was falling from the pitch-black sky, and the unique silence that can only be brought by a combination of dark early morning hours and bitter cold, likely exacerbating Helen and Lori's anxiety as Leisha remained unfound. At 5:50 a.m. on Monday, January 23rd, Leisha's mother, Helen, reported her daughter missing to the Fort Worth Police Department. Something was certainly wrong, though Lori could only bring herself to imagine that her sister was just stranded somewhere with car trouble. Helen was, to quote Lori, freaking out completely. Leisha didn't make a habit of getting herself in trouble by any stretch of the imagination, and it was completely out of character for her not to have returned home. Helen's worry, her fear, quickly transferred to Lori. If Leisha's own mother sensed something terrible, after all, it must be true. The search for Leisha got underway fast, thanks to her and Lori's older sister, Debbie. Debbie and her husband were part of a CB club popular in Fort Worth at the time, called the Citizens Band Radio Club, and utilized the club's vast contacts in the search. A couple of Leisha's cousins, too, were in the club, and before long, virtually every member had an eye out for Leisha's Chevy Impala, at the very least, with some actively searching. Among those searching was a man named Travis Langston, who was married to Fran Arnold Langston, mother of Rachel Trelisa, who, along with Julie Mosley and Renee Wilson, make up Fort Worth's missing trio, three young girls who disappeared without much of a trace in 1974, a couple days before Christmas. Leisha's sister Debbie, in fact, was close friends with Rachel Trelisa too. Coincidences or shared details aside, later in the afternoon of Monday, January 23rd, 1978, at 5:20 p.m., Travis Langston spotted a car that matched the description put out on the CB Club's bandwidth. Langston pulled over on the 2300 block of Southwest Loop 820's Access Road at Lubbock Avenue to inspect the vehicle, and it was Leisha's. The location was less than 1.5 miles from the McGee home. He alerted the rest of the CB Club and the police. Leisha's 1968 Chevrolet Impala sat abandoned with a flat tire. It was obvious extreme violence had taken place. There was blood on the Impala's front and back seats and floorboards, along with Leisha's bloodied green jacket and blue scarf in the back seat. A backseat armrest was broken off the door. An intense struggle had taken place. When police arrived and began inspecting the vehicle, they found blood smeared on the car's bumper and trunk lid. Nothing could prepare them for what they saw as they opened the trunk, a vision that would haunt them thereafter, no doubt. Inside the trunk, the lifeless body of Leisha Ann McGee laid bloodied from multiple stab wounds to her chest, her throat viciously slashed. Leisha's cousins, who'd heard that the car was found over the CB, arrived at the scene shortly after police. The cops weren't talking and wouldn't let them near to see anything, but the blood on the bumper told them everything they needed to know, that the results of the search for their cousin had ended in tragedy. Outside the vehicle, many feet away from Leisha's Impala, near a fence, her keys were found. Her two wallets, too, were found outside the vehicle on the road's shoulder, though by who, and if they were actually found on the shoulder at all, is seemingly a point of debate. Others have suggested more recently that they were found in a storm drain two blocks away. Some say Langston suggested the police look there, others that he found the wallets himself, and others still claim that the police found them as the result of a routine search for evidence on the scene. The source of the confusion, perhaps, is a report put out by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram describing a, quote, substance found in a storm drain some two blocks away that had been sent for testing. It was thought to be blood. Travis Langston, too, had been involved in searches for missing children and adults since the disappearance of Rachel Trelisa, Julie Mosley, and Renee Wilson. The loose connections to the missing trio case have often clouded facts and evidence in Leisha McGee's case. The autopsy performed on Tuesday, January 24, 1978, determined that Leisha had died 1 to 2 hours after eating pizza, suggesting that the attack occurred immediately or not long after leaving her friends Kathy and Jim's home. The autopsy also revealed the extent of the violence that had taken place. Leisha was fully clothed when she was found, wearing the clothing she'd worn the night before, a colorful long-sleeve shirt and blue jeans. Though Leisha hadn't been sexually assaulted, the motive of the attack could have been just that. The defensive wounds she sustained to her hands and arms suggested that she'd fought hard, giving the perpetrator a much greater struggle than he likely expected. Those defensive wounds also suggested that Leisha was attacked from behind. Leisha suffered 7 stab wounds to her chest, but ultimately died of acute hemorrhage shock, according to her death certificate, from, quote, complete transverse dissection of the throat due to cutting wound. Leisha's murder went cold not long after it happened. And though the detectives on the case scrambled to find the 17-year-old's killer, the initial investigation turned up few leads. When detectives first began investigating the murder of 17-year-old Leisha Ann McGee, they were confused, one newspaper article put it, as to why her car ended up where it did, several blocks west of the route she should have taken to get home from her friend's house. While the answer seems immediately obvious, that Leisha herself didn't drive there, her murderer did, it seemed to have perplexed Fort Worth police detectives. Motives weren't sticking either. It wasn't robbery because both of Leisha's wallets contained small amounts of money when they were found, and it wasn't a madman disguised as a Good Samaritan, a theory that occurred to detectives at the scene when Leisha's body was found. They thought, perhaps, that the Impala had developed a flat and that someone stopped to pretend to help before attacking. That theory didn't last long. Investigators found out that Leisha's right rear tire had been slowly leaking for several weeks, and she was regularly stopping to put air in it. The flat likely occurred as the car sat on the shoulder. The only motive they could come up with was that someone had a vendetta against her, a theory that no one who knew Leisha was buying. She didn't really have any enemies. One friend said that Leisha, quote, wasn't the type to go around making people mad, and that there was nobody who knew her that would have done such a thing to her out of anger, unless someone she knew was a psychopath or sociopath. The police began interviewing Leisha's friends and co-workers. The Fort Worth police never seemed to consider that rape was the motive, but the fight that Leisha gave deterred the perpetrator, who then killed her out of anger and whose time ran out to sexually molest her body. Perhaps it isn't the most flawless theory, though it makes substantially more sense than Leisha dying as the result of a grudge or perceived slight she'd made. It also makes more sense that the attack was the work of simply a depraved madman who enjoyed the thrill of killing. In NBC News footage of the impounded Chevrolet Impala, the amount of blood all over the vehicle is shocking. The footage shows the inside of the vehicle, with blood on the seats, and the floor mats taken out of the vehicle are lying on the floor of the storage facility, also very bloody. The trunk of the vehicle, too, is covered in blood. Some evidence, according to Leisha's sister Lori, has been lost in the case. A Monopoly board game that was in the trunk and contained fingerprints has apparently been lost. And the car was given back to the family in what seemed to them like a hurry, not long enough, Lori told us, for all forensic evidence to be analyzed. The clothes Leisha wore and the green coat found in the car, Lori said, were presumably destroyed by mistake. For years, Helen McGee put notices in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram every year on the anniversary of Leisha's slaying. Helen was a single mother and worked for a department store, so paying for Leisha's funeral, on top of missing many days of work, was beyond a difficulty. The Citizens Band Radio Club, of which Leisha's sister Debbie and cousins were members, helped raise the money to pay the costs. Funeral services for Leisha and McGee were held at All Saints Episcopal Church on Thursday, January 26, 1978, and she was buried at Laurel Land Cemetery. For three decades, Leisha's slaying was cold, with virtually no new or valid leads coming in at all. In 2009, however, there was a big break. A Fort Worth homicide detective, Jose Hernandez, picked up Leisha's case to give it a fresh look. He began requesting DNA testing in June of 2009 on the various physical items of evidence that still existed, one of which was a cigarette butt taken from the rear door ashtray of Leisha's 1968 Chevy Impala. Two DNA profiles were obtained, one belonging to a male and one a female. The female DNA profile, it turned out, was Leisha's. The male DNA was entered into state databases, and after only 3 months, Detective Hernandez got a hit. The DNA on the cigarette butt matched that of a Fort Worth man who was serving a 50-year sentence at the Allred Unit of the Texas Department of Corrections in Wichita Falls. A man with an extremely violent past named Robin Dwayne Carter. To ensure the match, two detectives traveled from Fort Worth to Wichita Falls and obtained a cheek swab from Carter, which again matched. They were keeping their fingers crossed for a confession from the inmate, but Carter told the detectives he had nothing to do with Leisha's murder. Leisha's sisters were furious when they were told the district attorney's office wouldn't be moving forward with a murder charge against Carter. Robin Carter was a name Leisha's family knew. He was Leisha's age when she was slain, 17. And his family grew up on the street behind the McGees. The connection was surely there, as was Robin Dwayne Carter's propensity to violence and terror. That's next time on Gone Cold. We don't normally devote entire episodes on our regular feed to depraved killers or madmen, but we're making an exception in the case of Robin Carter for one big reason. It was announced in early June of 2020 that Carter would be eligible for parole in September 2020. This is worrisome not only for justice, since he is likely responsible for Leisha McGee's slaying, but because of the severity of his other crimes, which will be discussed next episode. We in no way intend to glorify this particularly wretched individual, but feel it's important to share just what he's capable of, since the state of Texas has decided that he should be let back out on the streets. It seems likely from his past crimes that if Robin Carter is released, he'll hurt someone else. Hopefully, the Tarrant County District Attorney will act fast and seek Carter's prosecution for Leisha's murder. But in the meantime, if you have any information about the murder of Leisha McGee, please contact the Fort Worth Police at 817-392-4307. Special thanks to Lori for speaking with us about her sister's case. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels get the show ad-free. For just $2.50, you'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. Patreon exclusives include The Woman in the Wooden Box and The Thrill Killers, among others. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. We appreciate y'all's support beyond words. The Texas Star Telegram and documents were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.